G'day and kia ora rugby fans. This is That Rugby Podcast, hosted by The Sports Booth. I'm your Kiwi half of this podcast, Luke, who enjoys a full trophy cabinet, running rugby, and whenever the Bledisloe comes around. With me is the Aussie mate, Husey, who loved Eddie Jones and now despises him, is used to being let down, and can't actually remember what it's like to see a Bledisloe win. Tune in for 30 minutes of no-nonsense rugby chat, a bit of Trans-Tasman banter, and maybe a few laughs, if you're lucky. Get yourself set and engaged as we kick off That Rugby Podcast. Welcome back to That Rugby Podcast. It is myself and Husey here again. Feels like a bit of deja vu because we are sitting here yet once again with a Waratahs win over Crusaders.
Yeah, two times in the one season, I was trying to think, how historic must that be? Then I realised the Chiefs did it last year. But they didn't beat them three times once, they only beat them twice. So maybe the Waratahs could get into the finals and beat the Crusaders again in the finals. Maybe then we could get some history. But, I mean, it's pretty historic for an Australian team to do, to beat the Crusaders twice in 1 year. I think it's historic for any team to do. I think the Chiefs last year were, I mean, they made it to the finals. So that means the Waratahs are definitely making it to the finals this year. So, it's 10 years on from 2014. Like, all the signs are there, my friend. All the signs are there.
The signs are pointing you in their direction. I like
exactly
it.
Exactly right. Exactly. It was one of the best games of rugby I've watched in a while, I will say. It was so entertaining, minute to minute. Sevu Reese was just on another level. He's got to be in the starting All Black side this year. Like, he's just, he was a one-man band. He was dragging that team along in his wake. Like, he was literally making that Crusaders team a threat the whole game. And then I think from the Waratahs, it was a united pack effort. Like, everyone played and stepped up well, minimizing errors, just running hard and really being pretty brutal in the game as well. Then for it to go to Golden Point and then for Will Harrison to nail that field goal coming back after his long stint injury, just storybook type stuff. Excellent game, and just, yeah, edge of your seat stuff the whole way. So yeah, one of the great games of Super Rugby that's been played this season. And in fact, I think we're going to have to probably eat our words a little bit, because we said last week how much we hated the bye weeks and how none of the games were good. And then we had one of the best weekends of Super Rugby in terms of the games that were played this weekend. And it's just, it's like the universe heard the podcast last week and was like, you know what? We're going to show these idiots how good a bye round can be.
I want to apologize for absolutely nothing, QZ, because tell me this. Imagine if the Blues had played like the Judah in Fiji,
yeah,
and then the Force hosted the Brumbies, and we had a great full weekend of rugby. So let's not try and escape that we could have just had a full week of rugby of full great games. Like,
100, I don't disagree with you. I just what I'm saying is that
We ripped the games that happened last week, especially
just saying that none of the we said that there was going to be one good game this week, which was going to be the Hurricanes and the Chiefs, and we were wrong. There were four good games this week.
I think we put a few asterisks by the end of our conversation last time, because we were like, well, no one knows what Rebels, the Waratahs are going to deliver. Yeah. The Rebels and Highlanders both needed a win to keep their like finals hopes alive that we kind of discussed. And then Moana Pacific and Reds, we kind of said, if the Reds were any good and going to show that they were good, they'd do a job, and they didn't. So I think we got proven wrong by those teams that we didn't expect much from.
The thing with the Reds is that their name is the Reds, and so they must think that red cards are a good thing. Why else would you get two of them, you know?
My favourite thing, I think it's Ryan Smith said a quote, and it was like all that they had discussed training-wise for the week leading up to Moana Pacific is about how violent the game's going to be. And the top comment on the Instagram post was, I think they took that too literate. Like, just going out there, hitting red cards. Like, yeah, Reds implode. It was a massive, because I looked at the stats afterwards and I go, Reds shouldn't have lost that game. Like, that discipline errors, that cost them that game. And I know, saw some comments about how they think it was rigged, like, it shouldn't have been red cards. When you do a swing and arm with a fist, even if it's a soft number 9 hitting a big forward, you leave yourself up to being red carded. Like,
You close the fist, you've come in with a single arm. That's Tate McDermott. Same goes for McWright. McWright never dipped. It was poor tackle technique, which you'd argue he's one of the best tacklers in the comp. So he knows better than that. It's just a discipline. It was one of those ones, Frank Lomani, as we said, reckless. I don't think McWright ever goes with intent to hurt anyone. It's just reckless, yeah. Got it wrong, exactly. Especially being the player he is. But, yeah, look, I just wanted to mention quickly, when the Waratahs, two wins, if they weren't to win another game all season, let's just say, you know, that happened, to say your two wins all season are against the 12-time Super Rugby champions, you would just be like, what?
Not bad. You'd sit there at the end of the season and be like, it's a bit disappointing, but not bad. You know, not the worst season we could have had, you know? And look, there's definitely opportunities for the Waratahs the rest of the season. You know, I mean, the Chiefs just lost, and then the Waratahs have got a bye week this week. The Chiefs have got one as well. But then the Waratahs host them at home. If they could show up the way they did against the Crusaders, they could make a contest of that. Hosting the Brumbies, you know, Brumbies are not immortal this year. They're definitely vulnerable. And they host the Reds at the end of the season as well. And we've just seen the Reds have a brain explosion as well. Travel to Perth, that's a very winnable game as well. So the Waratahs have got chances the rest of the way to sneak into the finals at the end. I think they might miss out by a game, which would be disappointing, but I could see it happening.
Yeah, and let's run through. So before this week happened, we had the strength of schedules got kind of released. So the strength so far, the Blues had the easiest schedule. So they were the easiest schedule. Then it went Brumbies, Chiefs, Druruta, Hurricanes, Rebels, Waratahs in 6, Pacifica 5, Reds 4, Highlanders 3, Crusaders and Force 2-1. And that makes sense as they're the bottom two teams, probably facing the hardest schedule. So when we go the strength of schedule remaining, the Reds are actually, you know, before this week, had the opposition had a 36.2% win rate. So you would have thought the Reds had a pretty good run in too. So the Waratahs for the first, you know, few weeks, again, as we said, they were 6 harder schedules. They've got 6 of their, they sit in the middle again with the easy middle schedule remaining. So there's definitely a chance there. But the big movers and shakers, I think Reds probably after this implosion drop a little bit, but the Crusaders definitely could move up. The Brumbies are sitting 8, so they've got a 47% win rate for the rest of the year. Their opposition for the rest of the year. So a good chance of them to go for a top 2 spot. Because the Blues and the Hurricanes, Blues have the hardest strength of schedule yet, and the Hurricanes are the fourth hardest, and they play each other at one time. So if the Brumbies can keep on winning, there's easily a top 2 spot, and we know how hard it is. I know as a Hurricanes fan how hard it is to go to Canberra and win. So we sit here for a moment, and as I think the rugby column posted, the Australian teams are at a 41% win rate against New Zealand teams this year, which is their best in a long time. And so we're in this golden moment where, as we just saw Moana Pacifica beat the Reds, no one wins in Fiji. Australian teams beating New Zealand teams. Now, I know it's a down year for New Zealand teams because of the World Cup exodus, but still this is what we want from a competitive tournament, is anyone on their day should be able to beat anyone. And I feel like we're getting there week by week, day by day, game by game.
Well, I want to talk a bit about the Rebels game. I think we haven't mentioned that one enough against the Highlanders, and what a fantastic performance that was from the Rebels. You know, I think they've sort of put it a little bit better together. Lineout was still horrible. They needed another goal kicker, like Carter Gordon isn't a goal kicker, but really well executed game from the Rebels. Darby Lancaster was phenomenal in that game, 3 tries in that game, and some excellent running. But the most impressive player in that game for me was Andrew Kellaway. Come back from injury. People thinking maybe he's coming back a week too early. But his support work was fantastic. The way he just transformed the attack by being in the spot that he needed to be as fullback cannot be overstated. And I think that's really what's going to set him as the Wallabies, cement him as the Wallabies fullback. If I'm Joe Schmidt, that's who I'm earmarking as my Wallabies fullback. You know, as good as Tom Wright is, Tom Wright is probably better at the individual play, whereas Kellaway is really good at being in that team space. He set up so many tries just from his own individual running. He's elusive, but then he's looking for an offload, or he's looking for a pass. You know, he set up Carter Gordon for a great try. Just so many positives to his game that if I'm looking for my Wallabies 15 at the moment is Andrew Callaway, just from how he played.
Yeah, just to step in there, I'm interested. Obviously, there's been talk that the Gitto Law is going to be scrapped, which I actually think is a good thing, because I think Joe Smith's, all he's doing is bringing the inevitable closer. And that's not like, he's mentioned many a times how he wants to select Australian-based players. It makes it easier for the squad, understandable. But you should also not have to worry about where you're playing. And you can, if you're putting your hand up and playing good rugby, should be able to be selected. So saying that, who is your starting back three for the Wallabies?
Well, see, I would reach out to Corabetti and see, like, are you seriously done? Are you done? and if he is, then he doesn't get picked. If he's not done, if he wants to come back and play, then I'd have him on one of the wings. I'd have Callaway as another wing. As a fullback, not the other wing. The other wing is an interesting spot. I would have said at the start of the season, Noonga Niitawase, but he's had a bit of a down year, and also he's going to league next year, so I don't know if you necessarily want him in the Wallaby system, not because of like, oh, fuck you, you go to league kind of thing, but because we're building the squad for a British and Irish Lions tour next year and a Rugby World Cup in 2027. So you've got to start thinking a little bit longer term than that. Max Jorgensen could play wing, and then he gives you utility for fullback if something happens to Callaway as well. I do like Tom Wright on a wing as well. I think he can be a really good winger. Corey Toole is another name that comes to mind just to bring some real attacking flair in there as well. You know, I think the Wallabies have got some options. Rogue name out there as well, Darby Lancaster. Like, he's really come on, and he's a young guy as well. He's played in the seven system, though, so he really could be an outside option for the Wallabies. He should certainly probably be in the extended squad. Just based on this last week, of what I saw from him in that game was immense. I'd heard his name before a bit, but I sat down and watched that full game, and he was tremendous.
Three players. Let's say Corabetti is in. Let's say he's in. Let's say he says yes.
Corabetti, Callaway, and as we sit here right now today.
Yeah.
Sit here right now today, Tom Wright.
Interesting. I don't mind. I think the only change I would make is Corey Toole, and I'd go Toole over Wright. But I also see, like, Wright has been playing phenomenally again. And again, he's consistent, does a job, I think, for on the wing again for Australia, he's the type of player that can deliver those performances that you need.
The only thing I'm worried about with Toole is, like, going up against, like, New Zealand, South Africa and stuff like that, you need, like, his size against some of those players does concern me a little bit.
That's the X factor that Toole and Kobe bring.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah. I just don't. It's what makes me wary. It's a gamble on him. I don't think it's wrong to gamble with him. In fact, I think it's a really brave decision. I wish I was brave enough to make it. I don't know if I'm 100% sold enough on it. But I think, look, if you've got Corabetti there, he does enough defensively that I'd be okay with Corey Toole there as well. So, like, between him and Tom Wright, it could go either way for me. I wouldn't be upset either way.
Yeah, and I mean, as we speak here, even say either one, but if you go, let's say Toole and Corabetti and Callaway, you've got three of probably the fittest blokes. You know, a sevens player, Corabetti's a freak, and Callaway gets through a mountain of work as well. And again, it was interesting hearing David Campese speak at the Hong Kong Sevens. I don't know if you've seen that clip. It's gone a bit viral as he said he's being blacklisted from Australian rugby, but we won't get too deep into that. But he did mention Australia has struggled with a bit of their identity. And you remember back into those teams again when he was playing, how much Australian flair that backline had, you know, the Horans, and then even going all the way through, you had the Mortlocks, you know, Takiri, Sailor, you had Australian backline flair. And I think that I'd look back and I go, you have missed that. And you were building it, I think, with Rennie, and I remember that try vividly against France, where the 100-meter Fekete try. And I go, there is a bit of that. Like, I don't fear an Australian back line. And I haven't fared one since you go back to like the Adam Ashley Coopers, you know, the Giddos in the team and stuff like that. And I go, there is a chance here, I think, with an X-factor like Tool, with even if Kotabete's not there, some of these players that you can go back to playing that flair type rugby. And I'm interested to see kind of again how they select it, but yeah.
My bigger question for you, and I didn't know that this was a big question. I think there was going to be a bigger question about who's the 10 for the Wallabies, but I think that's that there's enough good candidates out there now that the Wallabies are 10 is all right. Who do you think is going to be the starting 9 for the Wallabies?
Oh, that's a good question. I would have said pre this Tate McDermott, but again, and this is not his red card affecting the situation. It's more the Reds' form over the past 4 weeks. You know, you don't start 3-0 and then lose 4 on the trot without having something going wrong. It's hard. That is depending. If, let's say the Brumbies run out winners, I just about go, what good is coming out of the Brumbies? And I go, if Ryan Lonergan's the captain, It's an out there call, and I understand it because I think you've got some obviously some decent halfbacks. But I go, if the man keeps putting his hand up and he leads the Brumbies to a really good season, I go Ryan Lonergan. If I'm selecting the team right here, right now, I'm going Tate McDermott as my first 9. But yeah, it's a good question because there are
I think that's a bigger question mark right now.
100% like I agree.
I'm sitting there. Like, who's going to be my starting 10? I'm probably just going Noel Alessio. He's the most in form at the moment. Who's my bench 10? Probably Carter Gordon. You know, like, he's probably in silver medal for that. But then I look at a halfback, and I'm like, well, I don't think Jake Gordon is a international level. I think he's
a good rugby player. When he puts on that gold jersey,
something just seems to go wrong. Then you know Nick White's out in Perth and stuff's just not going right for the Western Force, right? I don't even know who the Rebels' starting 9 is.
They change every week, but yeah.
Yeah. So then you're really between McDermott and Lonergan.
Yeah. Yeah. You are, and I the more and more I think about it, I go, just how you've said it as well, if you're going Noah Lolasio, you'd probably put him in with Lonergan. And again, I don't know who the better player is, but even if it's situation-wise, that Lonergan's in the better position, and, you know, again, the Brumbies are doing what the Brumbies do, and they just signed ways to win, then
have him as the starting 9-10, and then have McDermott and Carter Gordon off the bench is not a bad call either.
100%. A bit of spark off the bench is always good.
Two young running halves. Like,
just what you need.
Get them to finish up the game while everyone's buggered.
Talking about running halves and halves that don't run too much, I just wanted to touch base on the European rugby situation that they've got going on. I was in a pub, obviously, on the Saturday Arvo, and I watched one of these stranger games I think I'll ever witness in the rugby circles. Bordeaux versus Harlequins in the Champions Cup. Now, as me and Hughes were trying to explain, a lot of Southern Hemisphere people really don't understand the setup in the Champions Cup. So you've got the big leagues, which is the URC, which is South Africa, Ireland, Italy in it, and Wales, apologies, in the Welsh teams. You've then got the Premiership, which is the All English teams. Then you've got the French League. So that's all those three leagues come together, make a Champions Cup, very similar to Champions League in football. They do pool stages, and then they go into round of 16 quarterfinals. So we were at the quarterfinal stage, and in Bordeaux had just smashed Saracens the week before. And this round of 16, we're playing Harlequins. 30-degree day in Bordeaux, so it's a hot day. So they're having their heat breaks, umbrellas coming out to cover up the players and some and keep them under out of the sun, which was already interesting to start it when it's still winter, basically. You know, we're still battling 50 degrees. It's just about to rain in England right now. But that was the situation on Saturday. Then just the style of rugby. Now, there was over 90 points scored in the game in the end. And it was like 46-45. But the style of rugby they played for, like, the game was just incredible. So it was a one-off runner, so a little tip ball, bang, hit a forward, box kick. And it was just, who's going to make a mistake? And it looked like they were scared to counter-attack. It got to the point, like, me and a couple of other New Zealand mates who are in the pub, Bordeaux got into Harlequin's half. So they're in the attacking half and they went for a box kick. And I just went, this is incredible, because you've got a full stadium of French fans probably loving what they're seeing, because there's over 90 points scored, loving the style of footy. And I just go, if I watched that in Super Rugby, I would be annoyed at what I'm watching. Like, I was like, that would frustrate me seeing my team kick at 40 metres out from the try line, do a box kick and try and contest that. To be fair, they got the ball back in the situation, but I just sat there and I was like, it shows the different styles. And as much as people go, oh, rugby needs to be entertaining sport, we need to do this, we need to do that, whatever French rugby's doing, that was a full crowd, they are selling out stadiums, they love rugby. So as much as, yes, oh, we've got to think about ball and play and this, and there shouldn't be so many caterpillars and this and that, whatever the French are doing, they're getting fans there to watch the rugby. And they're doing a really good job of it. Is it the money input that they've got? Is it the being able to bring in the best talent in the world? Well, only one French team has made it through to the quarterfinals, or the semifinals, sorry. So it answers us those questions that, like, how do we get people in, and how with these style of play, it seems to work. So it's not like I can sit there and judge it, but it was just interesting. And then on top of all of this, we got the South African rugby team struggling with travel, selecting top tier teams. So, like, the Bulls are the big team that they made all the way through to the quarterfinal. Stormers have been knocked out in round of 16. The travel commitments, because you don't know if you are playing the next week, so like from the sixth round of 16 to the quarterfinal, you don't know if you're playing in the round of, if you don't win your game. Yeah. So their round of 16 game, I believe, was in South Africa. Before that, they had a URC game in Ireland, I think. Then they were going to, if they won, they would have to go to England to play Northampton. But they can't book those flights until after the game. And so then they had the issues that you've got to get 23 plus coach plus management, a side of 40-odd players on a plane over there. It was going to take a day of travel or something like that to get it done. Then they've got to play that game against Northampton. Then they've got another game in Ireland next week in the URC against Munster. So there's a lot of rugby going on. And in the end, Bulls head coach Jake White said, and picked up, they're calling it a second tier team, but he basically rests all the Springboks for that Bulls clash against Northampton, and which is one of the biggest European competitions games for the European rugby at that time. So a lot of judgment being put on there. As much as I can sit here and go, look, well, South African rugby, come back to Super Rugby, there is a lot of those things that probably don't get thought about now that are getting thought about. Oh, yeah, same time zone. Oh, yeah, it works. But the flight commitments, there's still a lot of flying that needs to be done, things like that. It just opened my eyes with being like, gosh, an interesting competition, but there's a lot going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, look, as I actually had experienced stuff like this from esports where, you know, teams wouldn't know if they were going to the World Championship until like a month beforehand, and then or a month and a half beforehand, and then having to book those flights, but then they also want to go over and train and things like that, and it makes it difficult because then you're buying these flights on short notice, and you're also having to coordinate people from different cities and things like that. It is really difficult and really tricky. So that's on a much smaller scale. Like, a team of players would be like five instead of like, and there's, maybe one coach and no support staff. So then trying to do that on a much bigger scale, as you said, minimum of 23 players, probably more than that if you have some extra reserve coaches, management, support staff, et cetera, it's a huge logistical undertaking. But where South Africa doesn't have to deal with challenges like that, and that's in Super Rugby, because we don't have this second Championship Cup going on, so you don't need to worry about it. So if they were just in Super Rugby, it wouldn't be as much of an issue. But in all seriousness, I think it just highlights a problem with South Africa in general, that they are just pretty isolated in the rugby world. There's no one that plays in their level of competition anywhere close to them. It's just whether you go north or east, really. Mm-hmm. It is. It sucks for them, but they have to deal with those challenges one way or another. And the fact that it's, I think, when you're in one competition, those challenges are easier because you can sort of you have the schedule for the full season, and then when finals time rolls around, you've got a bit of an easier time of it. You might have 1 or 2 weeks, you know, where you might need to find out if you get through to the next round, where you need to book a flight on short notice or something, yada yada yada. Look, it's just tough being in the South African teams. It's really tough for them. I do have sympathy for them, but because they want to play rugby at a top level, and yeah, it's rough.
Yeah, and it's interesting. No, obviously, none of the South African teams made it through to the semi-finals, so it is obviously weighing a bit down. And I think the highest. Let me check. I think the highest South African team in the URC currently is 4th. I want to say so. It's not like they're excelling. Here we go. Let me bring it up. No, they're 3rd. The Bulls are 3rd with a game against the 4th place Munster this week. So there's a lot on the line, and with that, and saying, yeah, as you're saying, it's never easy, and they're not. I think the perception of South African rugby probably is taking a little bit of a hit just because, as we see from their World Cup wins, you expect South African rugby to be good, but there's a lot more to it than just the results that you're seeing on the page. So, yeah, interesting time. Will be interesting to see how they go forward. It will be even more interesting in, if there's a Club World Cup that comes about in 2028, how that revolves around South African rugby, how they pencil that in, how they make sure that those flights are going to work. Like, I'm going to do a video on this, probably on go out next Sunday, because one of the Exeter coach came out and said a really good thing. And he said, if World Rugby can show us that this is going to make money, this is going to grow the sport, this is how we're going to do it, this is the funds that we expect and costs in this, perfect, let's go for it, why not? If they just go ahead and said, we should try this because we think it's going to work, it could push teams back lots of funds and lots of years back into hibernation, just about, because if you're spending $2+ million to get this competition, to get to this competition, and you don't do well and you don't actually see those funds come back, England rugby's already at a tipping point with some of their teams. So it's like, how does that work? How do we see that working? Very interesting time.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of bringing the South African Super Rugby teams back, might be that there's not any room for South African Super Rugby teams to come back, because there has been an article out there on Rugby Pass about merging the Japan League One with Super Rugby to form a 24-team competition. Now, just based on the conversation we were just having then, another thought came to me as well, where what if we had a what if we did bring in South Africa and Japan into the competition, where we only bring 6 Japanese teams in? So then we have that 24-team competition. 6 South African teams, 6 Japanese, 6 Aussie, 6 New Zealand. 4 conferences, similar to, as 4 divisions, similar to an NFL conference. Top team in each division gets a spot in the playoffs. And then the next 4 top teams based on standings at the end of the season, you know, something like that. And then, you know, how do you determine which Japanese teams get in? Maybe there's some discussions to be had about that. I don't really know the full details. That's just a thought. But if we go to the article itself, it's basically talking about how it would boost viewership numbers, boost revenue, because Japanese fans love their rugby, filling out stadiums even when their teams are getting smashed and things like that. Have a 24-team competition, so more games to be broadcast, which is great, so more broadcast revenue there. But one of the benefits that is not so much, which is sort of indirectly talked about, is that a lot of Australian, New Zealand, and South African talent is in Japan. You get those players back sort of in Super Rugby, even if they're not playing for their home country, you see them in that Super Rugby competition again. So maybe that can lower some of the barriers for picking international players. Like, these players are still playing in the Super Rugby competition, so therefore they don't count as an international player for the purposes of something like the Giddo Law, which would be great. And then that encourages those players to rather than go to France, to go to Japan, and they can make their money in Japan and still be eligible for Wallabies All Blacks selection. So that way the competition still is of a really high level and standard, because players can, you know, those top players are in those locations. Look, I'd love to see it. I'd love to see the expansion. One thing we talked about the bye week, which we're both unapologetic for, is that the low number of games is just horrendous. It's not fun at all. Like, you look at the NRL, right? They run a Thursday night game, two Friday night games, three Saturday games, and two Sunday games, right? That, you know, eight games a week. That is a huge slate of games. And you think what Super Rugby could do with that. And then you've got these different time zones, so you can service these different time zones by playing the games at different times. You know, let's say you had two Friday night games, four Saturday games, four Sunday games. That's what, 10 games, 20 teams. So you'd even need to put another game in there, right? So, or another two games in there.
Another two games. Two games on a Monday. Kick it off, mate. Monday night rugby. We love that.
Yeah. Exactly. So there's, you know, a Thursday night game, two Friday games, four Saturday, four Sunday, one Monday. There you go. You get a full spread of games. You can work out the schedule so that a team that plays on Thursday doesn't play on Monday. Things like that. You give the teams the travel times. I think it'd be really great. You have so much rugby to watch. And you know, one of the lacking from rugby is storylines. The only time you see rugby in the news is negative things at the moment. And that for me is a real bone to pick with Nine and Stan, because Stan owns the rights to rugby in Australia, and that's owned, of course, by Channel 9. They didn't even run it in their own bloody sports news sections. It's only NRL and AFL, right? You own this product now. This is, you should be promoting this, because you're the one that makes the money off of the broadcast getting viewership numbers. Like, Super Rugby is just taking money from you because you're broadcasting the game, right? But you're the one that need to get the eyes on the game, right? Like, that's where your advertisement dollars come from. So you're not promoting it. But something like this could get those, could make headlines. Like, it's something that can make headlines. And that's what rugby really needs at the moment, is positive headlines. So look, that's what rugby needs. A move like this would generate those headlines, and then a myriad of other benefits as well. You know, it's not something that's going to happen next year, because the current deal is in place through 2025, but it's sort of after next year, anything can happen. So, look, Phil Waugh, Rugby Australia CEO, he's one piece of this puzzle, but it's going to be Rugby Australia and Rugby New Zealand getting together and sorting something out, because what we're doing currently is not sustainable. It's not working. It's not growing. Staying like this for another few years is not going to work. There needs to be some kind of big change.
I agree. And actually, on top of that, there was a... with this, there's actually a talk of a second division, because there's 12 teams in the Japan top league. There's, I think, six in their second division and five in their third division. So you take those 11 teams, okay, so you've got them. Again, if we go, Higuari's come in, there's 12 teams there. Now, I just want to read out the Hurricanes B team. They're called the Hunters. They played the Chiefs B team, and this is their backline. Jordy Villajohn, which he played the first game of the season for the Hurricanes, is 9. Aidan Morgan at 10. Salisi Riasi at 11. Riley Higgins at 12. Baylen Sullivan at 13. Daniel Simpkinson at 14. Harry Godfrey at 15. All seven of those backs could be starting rugby players in Super Rugby. There is no doubt. So it opens this idea that, hey, can we actually go to some of those areas? And I know we talk about, like, has Australia got too many Super Rugby teams? But maybe, does Australia have too many Super Rugby teams at a high level? And say, let's again say, we instead go 20-team top league, 20-team second division. You know, you cut two teams from Super Rugby down, you cut a couple of teams from that Japan League 1 down, and then you can look at the Aguaras, you can look at a couple of B teams, you can open that up to, and again, we're a franchise-based thing, so there will be people with money out there who want to start a team somewhere, go, hey, here, let's do this. I think there's an opportunity for that, and I don't see why not. And again, then, and even in the article, it said, and I'll paste the article for those who are listening to this on YouTube or watching this on YouTube in the description, but it even says, look, we could just about get to a free agent pool. Because you could, you could, there would, as you see with news, you'd have people moving, people doing this. There would be so many storylines. It would be incredible. So I'm all for expansion in the right way. I think this is a merger, as big companies always do. There's mergers all over the world that happen where stuff like this. And I think this is a better together type headline that could work. Hey, together are actually better. It's the travel's not that difficult. Even like the timing, like we can make the timings work for television. Like, you know, you could literally have Red Zone. You could have a Rugby Zone on a Saturday with like 6 or 7 games and run them from midday Fiji, where there's the Fiji Enduro kicking off their game, all the way till late at night. It could work something like that.
I saw an article on Facebook before about Super Rugby that I wanted to reference, but I've lost it now. But in the Rugby Pass article, they do actually talk about eligibility, so I will credit them with that as well. But that was my first thought on hearing the idea was, you've got that. Look, yeah, I think expansion, not retraction, is the way, because as soon as you start retraction, it's hard to stop it. That's why I'm glad to hear that there's potentially a saving grace for the Rebels to not have to exit the competition. I think that would be bad for the competition. I think the Rebels this year are showing up. I mean, they're in the top four at the moment.
Just to back up my idea, as you've just said, someone's willing as a private equity to save the Rebels who are $20 million in debt. Someone will start another rugby club up somewhere and be able to make money from it. Like, well, they're keen to do it. There's an opportunity. Sorry, continue. I just had it was brilliant from you.
That's actually what I was thinking of as well. That's mainly why I've gone into this Rebels chat now. You know, look, they've won 5 games this year. That's enough last year to get them into the finals, right? Moana Pacifica have won 3 games this year. They're 2 games away, potentially 2 wins away, potentially from making the finals, right? Like, Super Rugby this year, because the Crusaders aren't dominating everyone like the way that they usually do, it's opened up the competition a lot more. So there's opportunities for teams to come in and make something of themselves, to make the competition interesting. You combine that with some extra teams from Japan, you know, like the Rebels played some preseason games in Japan, right? That got great numbers out in Japan. You bring in those Japanese audiences, and then as well, it like your teams like your Moana Pacific win more games, your Rebels win more games, your Force wins more games. Some of those Japanese teams win games against the top teams in this competition as well. Like, it spreads out. The bigger the pool of teams, the wider the range of win-loss records, range of records as well. So it makes it a more even competition, and you don't have teams just continually losing week after week after week after week. I think, you know, I think it's a great idea. Super Rugby needs a big idea. Super Rugby needs something big to get it back into the public domain again. And yeah, look, it's going to take not only just a big idea, but also it's also going to take you know, Australian media to stand up and take notice of it. And what's going to make that happen is a big change. So yeah, I am all for the idea, and so is this cat.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I just think, I think if they're not having those discussions, at least a European Cup style competition with some way that these two leagues work together, we're not moving the right way. But yeah, 100%. Look, we've got one more bye week, and we, again, as we say, we won't apologise for anything we've said earlier about bye weeks, because they suck and we should have 6 games at least. But one more bye week, if we can get another week like we just had, I think the momentum will hold high rather than drop as it did in that first bye week.
If we look at the games this week, we've got some really important games for a bunch of different teams here. So first game is Dura versus Hurricanes.
Right? And Fiji.
Can the Hurricanes keep the undefeated streak going? Can Fiji make their way back to 500? A record of 4-4. It's a big one. Reds and Highlanders. Both their seasons sort of on the line here a little bit, especially the Highlanders, but the Reds as well needing to right the ship. In Queensland, Brumbies versus Blues in Auckland, big one for both of those teams, both looking to take outright second place on the ladder.
Oh, the wooden spoon then, battle.
Exactly. 11v12, Force v Crusaders in Perth, right? This is it. Come on, Force. Put the nail in the coffin. The Waratahs did their part, damn it, right? The Waratahs did their part. twice. We've done it twice this season. All right. It's now time for the Western Force to step up and show that they belong in the club as well. And let's put the Crusaders at sole last spot. Come on. It's what we need.
What everyone needs. Imagine that. That would be scenes. I love that. Yeah, look, so some big games. Hopefully we get some good footy from that and a good back end of the season. Some tough matchups still to go. For now, thank you for joining us. I have been Luke. That has been Husey. We are That Rugby Podcast. We will talk to you again. Same time, same place next time. Goodbye.
Peace.